And now, your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lairness.
Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglund from the offices of Rational Exuberance, here in the heart of the historic core, as the song said. And this is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour with your co-host and mine, Mr. Phil Lairness, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Dean Haglund. It's 99 degrees here in downtown Los Angeles.
Yes.
Am I going way too loud?
This is not exactly.
I'm way too hot, much like the temperature outside.
There we go.
Should we start over?
No, that'll be fine. Levelator will care for
our everything. Great. I hardly know her. Boy, I am amped up and ready to go. We have almost too much show for people today.
Again, we're just cramming it in.
Contact the network. Tell them we're going overtime. No. There is no network.
There is only us. Yes.
Hey, you know, kind of exciting. We've been doing this show more than 5 years now.
That is exciting.
This exact show. Again.
We're gonna again.
And again.
Till we get it right.
It's the Groundhog Day of podcast. That would actually be kind of a funny podcast.
I'll get it, just the whole thing
the
over
same
again.
Same show. Every. I think that's called a play.
It is, too.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's exciting to note that as far as we know, because, you know...
We don't know.
Just between you and me and our loyal legion of listeners,
mm-hmm.
We never got the most accurate
counts.
Numbers
yeah.
from a certain network, Farpoint Media.
Why did you?
We never did.
We never did.
Did we?
No, it was hard for them.
But since we went solo, as it were,
yes.
although there's two of us.
Right.
Since we
but
went independent.
You do, yes.
I do the work of many.
You do the work of many. I sit
don't
back.
Even know what we're talking about anymore.
You're talking about numbers.
Oh numbers. Yes. Our most downloads ever in a month, for the month just concluded of September.
Really?
And in the last week alone, our two biggest days ever, and three of our biggest 10 all within the last week.
Is that because my Twitter account was hacked by Russian teenagers?
If so, then let's keep getting it hacked in different countries because
you know what? Absolutely.
Listeners are coming on. And what I love about it is it's not just the new shows. I mean, people are going back and availing themselves
to previous
more than 120 episodes, I guess we have now, at our official site, chillpackhollywood.com. CHILLPAK.
And we tell
Hollywood.com.
Them every episode, hey, enjoy some of our older shows.
We don't say that every. Maybe we do.
I
don't know.
To.
Well, that's the end of another exciting...
No.
That no, was, we're just getting started.
That's just the start.
In fact, what do we mean, Dean Haglund, when we say that this is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour?
It means we take no responsibility for anything we say. No, I'm
that's
sorry.
Not
that's
what
not
I
a,
was
no,
thinking.
No.
Is that what it means?
No, I don't think so.
Because I've always felt a crushing weight of responsibility.
Well, that's your problem.
I feel so much better.
I feel when it's your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, I'm just merely a conduit.
Jinx, buy me a Coke.
And you can't say a thing till you buy it. That's right.
Oh, my God. No. We didn't write this show, did
no,
we?
No, we did not.
No.
We shouldn't.
We did get one of the things that I think of is we like to talk about what we hear from our listeners. They want us to talk about
right.
it, or something that affects them or
an
something.
Email that comes in at chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com.
That's the best way to do it.
That is
the
a
best
good,
way to
I
do
love
it.
That
write
way.
Us chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. I mentioned 2 weeks ago that we had received several emails, from a good friend of the show, LeJean Johnson.
Oh yes,
the Venerable Pooh, and we did answer one of his questions, which was how do I get a Blu-ray of The Truth Is Out There? We may revisit that question. That's an exciting
question.
That's
an exciting answer.
That you can
now.
Come at from so many angles.
Right.
All of which lead to joy.
Because now we have Blu-rays.
I do want to get to one in particular of the
Please.
Emails that he sent.
Yeah.
Dear Dean and Phil.
That's us.
In my efforts to catch up, I have recently listened to the live podcast from The Happiest Place on Earth. Now, when he says he in his efforts to catch up, I pray he means with this show.
Yeah, no, he's looking for us.
Because
he's
you're not going to catch up on your work. You're not going to catch up on how your friends are doing. You're not going to catch up on what's going on in the world, really. As much as I like to think we discuss that by listening to this show.
I think we do discuss it, but we discuss off off-news topics.
Off-news topics.
Right.
Where is Garrett Watley to say off-news topics?
Like, we're not discussing Carmageddon or any of that. Like, who cares? We don't drive in this town.
Carmageddon 2.
Well.
Even more Carmageddoner.
Yes. Which,
I will be actually discussing Carmageddon because I went to the Egyptian Theater this Saturday night.
Yeah, and you took public transit.
Of course I did.
Right.
However, not only was it sold out for the first time since I went to the red carpet premiere of The Hurt Locker, which wasn't an American Cinematheque event, but 200 people at least got turned away.
Wow.
And
for what
one of the reasons I think it was so crowded was because of Carmageddon. People on our side of town knew that they couldn't go
over
elsewhere,
there.
So they stayed in town to do something that night.
And they all went to the same theater.
They all went, and I'll discuss that
in
a moment.
It's going to be a great show.
My estimation, this is LeJean Johnson, Venerable Pooh, writing, my estimation of Dean has stepped up a notch.
See that?
Now, he does not say what notch it was at before.
Right.
But you're up a notch.
One notch from disgusting to mildly disgusting.
X equals the notch you were at before.
Right.
X plus one equals the notch you're at now.
I said there would be no math.
I am not familiar with Disney's supposed mob connections or racism.
Oh, yeah.
But I have you said as if you don't. You think he's lying. Do you think LeJean Johnson is covering something up?
No, I don't.
This letter could very well be our entire show today.
Yes.
I have stopped being a fan of the company at some point in my late 20s or early 30s.
Right.
Nevertheless, even though he did not know about these connections or the racism, perhaps it was a failed romance or just the utter failure to impress of Disney's Beauty and the Beast, which started my trend. But release after release where Disney's promotion engine promised something watchable and only delivered something designed to be franchised and merchandised to children of parents who buy Disney for their kids,
right,
which I must say number in the millions, that leaves me a cold, empty feeling for having championed Disney as a child.
Well, and you know who supports the Venerable Pooh? It's Mr. Roy Disney himself, the nephew of Walt, who went on record saying that the Disney Corporation has robbed the very...
However, that would point out to me,
yes,
based on what Roy Disney said and not based on what Dean Haglund feels, that the Venerable One, Venerable Pooh, should not feel bad about having championed Disney when he was a kid, because what Roy Disney is saying is that there has been a major corporate transformation that's taken place
at
Disney.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, so that's
so the films that
have come
LeJean fell in love with when he was a kid... and I'm guessing he didn't say what these were, but you know, your films like Pinocchio, for example, Fantasia, these films which are classics, why not continue to love them?
Right, but at the same time, you can argue that, the Nazi Party brought you the Volkswagen, and now it's a corporate shell of its early wagon of the people. You know, there's the arguments that can be made of empire behind...
You make a great point, because despite my love of Volkswagens, as you know...
Yes.
If I drive, I drive a VW Beetle, and if I fill up that tank anywhere near the Northeast, I do it with Empire State Gas, because they've got great gas from farm to pump. We've got great gas.
Nevertheless...
Those things aside...
Yes.
I am left with a cold, empty feeling when I think of the Nazi Party.
Right. And the Volkswagen. Wagon of the people.
No, not at all.
You drive the wagon of the people.
I'm the navigator of the wagon of the people.
Right. But, okay, so good. So you know your roots,
In any
then.
Case, mm-hmm. Dean's need to point out the historic, soulless nature of the man himself is laudable, if a little pedantic.
Well, the way you edited it, I must say.
Well, can you, before you defend yourself, that was just the way the audio was edited.
Yes.
Now, in fairness to me...
Yeah, you had to listen to a lot.
Yeah, there was... and that's always the question.
Yes.
How much is too much? How much is too little? I was shocked and needed to give people that feeling of how often you went into specifics of the submarine ride leaking. That really was, in listening to all the playback of all the MP3s,
yeah,
that's what struck me in a way that it didn't when we were at the park, was you really, really had your feelings hurt by the submarine ride.
Well, that's dangerous. That was dangerous.
Nothing was working. The submarine ride leaked.
For those who missed the show in 1984, I guess, or 85, I went to Disney.
Well, you know what? The show is there. Don't retell the story. Don't become pedantic again.
Oh, my.
My beef with the company now, this is LeJean speaking again, also includes the way they've manipulated copyright laws for corporations. And I thought
very
you
good.
Really...
Very good.
And their ridiculous branding. He gets into, the branding and the merchandising from cheese graters, everything that has the ears.
Right.
I'm going, for the purposes of time, because we do need to get to some other things, I'll pass that. But obviously, you know, this the 25-year branding. But my dislike of Disney only seems to grow. This is kind of funny. He talked about how when his parents had their 50th wedding anniversary vacation gift and they chose a trip to Disney World, he really didn't feel he could express his feelings about it. Probably not best to take a smile off their face. However, at that event, he couldn't walk 50 feet without seeing a family with small children crying.
And, exactly. Excellent point.
Loud crying and terrified screaming.
Terrified screaming.
And he would have filmed it and simply titled it The Happiest Place on Earth, but he knew it probably wouldn't last long on YouTube.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, the copyright issue is much too large to encompass here, and I'm not even fully versed in the minutiae of it.
Right.
But the more I hear of it, the less happy with Disney I become. Only one thing gives me hope.
Oh?
It's stupid and small, but it makes me grin. Disney Corporation has gone out of its way to get the rights of every Walt Disney created character remanded back into their clutches.
Right.
That sounds so great.
The remanded
like a prisoner
back. Like,
transfer.
Exactly.
I picture those poor characters.
So that's Sheriff County LA bus. Yeah, that black bus that goes to the city.
Being taken on one of those secured buses into Toontown.
Right.
They've succeeded in getting every single one with the exception of the Arizona State University mascot, Sparky the Sun Devil.
Huh?
Mr. Disney created Sparky for ASU and gave it to them in perpetuity.
Ah.
My hope that ASU will license Sparky back to Disney Corp for a not too small fee.
Ah.
Of course, living in Arizona, I do have a small bias. As always, enjoy the show. Keep on chillin'. LeJean Johnson, the venerable Pooh. So anyway, thank you, LeJean. That was a delight, as all
that
your emails
delight.
Were, but I really needed to share that one
that
with
was
everyone
awesome.
On the show.
Yes, that copyright issue we could talk about for some time, because Mickey Mouse almost became the 25-year moratorium on a copyright.
Of course, yes.
Almost became a public domain. And if Mickey becomes public domain, out goes their merchandising deals. And
the empire.
The empire collapses, as it's supposed to with something that's been around. You make money off it 25 years, then it goes public domain, and you create something else. You don't live off something for 1,000 years. But anyway, they lobbied successfully and crushed that, and Mickey will now be a merchandise product for many years to come.
I learned something. This, you... If you don't know this, and I pray that this is something you don't know about Disney, I pray. I'm going to be so disappointed because it involved me doing research into, of all things, plastics and the history of plastics.
Right.
And it led me to Disney.
Ah.
And so I'm hoping you don't know this, because you everything about this you will love. And when I say love, I mean you'll hate it, which
because
is why
it's
you'll
true.
Love it.
Okay.
There was an attraction at Disneyland until 1967 that was very popular in their Tomorrowland. I never knew this.
I'm not sure I know.
Called the Monsanto House of the Future.
No way!
Is there a corporation on Earth that you like less than Disney? Yes. One, in fact, is Monsanto.
So true.
This is two bad tastes in one for you.
Wow, so agricultural corporation already in on Disney's...
Now...
Tomorrowland.
Was Monsanto founded as an agricultural corporation, or was it a chemical corporation, or what?
Good question. I thought they started as agricultural and then bought chemical as their fertilizing and
anyway,
horrible thing group.
The Monsanto House of the Future, popular attraction until 1967, all made of plastic. Everything in the house made of plastic. That's what led me to it.
I see.
And I guess in the 1960s, people started to become concerned about plastics and the environment.
Right.
Yeah.
Why not?
Anyway, this is what's so hilarious. the Monsanto House of the Future showed visitors to the park what homes would be like in the future year of 1987.
Wow. With flying jetpacks and floaty food replicators.
Everything, of course, made of plastic.
Ah, fantastic.
She's dead, wrapped in plastic. Dean Haglund, wow. I went to Washington, D.C.
You did? To fight the power? Crush it? Stick it to the man?
You know, was not my intention, though all roads lead to fighting the power and standing up for one's truth. I was there doing a couple things.
Yeah.
I was doing interviews for a little documentary I'm cutting together just for research purposes,
mm-hmm.
for a series of spots, or at least one spot I'm going to do for the Peace Fund, which was founded by Adrian Paul,
yep.
protecting, educating, aiding children everywhere.
Right.
And I've begun my research by interviewing children about what these words mean to them, protection, same. Education, and aid. And it was really interesting because the topic of bullying came up a lot in my interviews with children in Washington, D.C.
A big concern.
And I really became aware of, in some of our most prestigious places of learning for young children,
right?
How bullying not only exists, but is allowed to exist and is almost not, I won't say rewarded, but it's certainly protected. It's certainly protected by the bureaucracies.
Really?
And
so, wait, are higher learning institutions...
It's not higher learning. It's I was talking to young kids. Elementary ages. I don't want to mention specific schools.
Right.
But it was really interesting to me. And at the same time, while I was back east, I witnessed a dog attack in the neighborhood of Kenwood in Chevy Chase, Montgomery County,
right.
in Maryland. And it was rather vicious and brutal. It was a dog attacking another dog, and this dog, as I learned, has been trying to pick off all the older infirm dogs in the neighborhood off leash. There have been complaints filed,
right?
Though the authorities say no complaints have ever been filed, even though we saw the affidavits. And so, you know, you're dealing with a bureaucracy,
right?
And as a witness, I testified to this, and I told the woman who was there, the supposedly doing her job, that you know, any day this dog was allowed to stay in that community was a failure of their system, which was not exactly something she wanted to hear.
Right.
So I've been sending letters to some of her
higher ups.
I was going to say superiors, but that wouldn't narrow it down at all. what both these things have in common for me is just this awareness of how many institutions, how when any organization becomes institutionalized, be it a bureaucracy, be it a school, be it a corporation,
yes,
how much our moral responsibility we are allowed to abdicate by being a part of that.
Right.
We don't have to stand up for what we actually believe or what we know to be right.
Because
we're absolved of that responsibility.
Right.
It's made easy for us to not have to do the hard thing as individuals when we're a part of bureaucracies, when we're a part of institutions, when we're a part of corporations.
But not just made, it's taught as an early age that you respect your authority, you respect your elders, because they are doing the protecting and the
right, but that's the people on the outside, and then we all rely on them. But then when you're in it, when you're a part of it, you know, that's not my department. I'm just following the rules. There's protocol that has to be done.
Right.
And
you're also keeping your job and not being a whistleblower, not upsetting apple carts,
right.
as it were. I agree. These are all not just in setting.
And it's what then so often allows, as we saw with The Truth Is Out There, conspiracy theories to foment and develop and proliferate,
take hold,
because when there is no, when you see no recognizably human behavior in your institutions, and be they again corporations, schools, bureaucracies, whatever,
right,
it becomes very easy to project then all your worst fears onto them,
Right, and apply a different motive than the one that's seemingly not there. Like there's another motive that must control these actions.
Right, as opposed to what I tend to see a lot, which is, you know, if there really is evil in the world, it's in the form of disinterest.
Right, right. By not being invested, you are the evil that is.
Now,
I'm going to get a chill pack.
I am the evil that is the Monsanto house of the future. What a great... I wish we could use that, but for branding purposes, I'm sure we can. But wouldn't that... If we ever have to change the name of the podcast again, you know, Monsanto's house of the future.
I like it. Of course, we'd be much more agriculturally based at that point. We'd have to talk a lot about seedlings and genetically modified. Prop 37 is coming up right here in the state to have to label food that is genetically modified, and it's being fought by Monsanto with the largest, I think, single amount of cash ever thrown against a proposition in the state of California. They're trying not to get the food label. So vote yes on Prop 37.
Might we have to spend some time on a future installment of
Monsanto?
Your Chillpack Hollywood Hour, Dean Haglund, to discuss the propositions on the ballot?
Wow.
Look at you, American citizen, getting all interested.
I already know my proposition.
Where every time I think I'm getting to the point where I don't want to vote because it only encourages them. Here you are with your patriotic duty.
Patriotic to label food genetically, even though technically those little stickers on the fruits and stuff already give you a little hint. If they're, I think it's the 8 or the 9 in front of a four-digit number will tell you that is genetically modified. The 8 is genetically modified. The 9 means it's organic. Or vice versa. I got to look that up.
We will get back to people with the update on that.
Right.
Now, why don't we do... The live event of the week.
The Chillpack Hollywood live event of the week.
Okay.
I'm going to make as my live event of the week the social event of the season.
What?
That I attended in Fairfax, Virginia and Centerville, Virginia a week ago. John Lawler's wedding.
Oh, yes. I saw the lovely picture on Facebook.
Married the lovely Kelly Johnson.
Yes. You officiated.
I officiated. You know, there were moments. It was a Catholic ceremony.
Oh, yes.
And there were moments.
How's your Latin?
I thought I might need to take over that thing.
Hour three, you were considering.
You know, look, I'm not Catholic.
I know.
And I'm an outsider to pretty much every religion.
Yes.
And when I say pretty much every, I mean
all of them.
All of them.
Yes.
And yet I find beauty in all of them.
Right.
And I'm always honored to be allowed to witness sorts of ceremonies of different faiths. That doesn't mean that certain things don't perplex me. When a priest who clearly doesn't really know the people he's marrying talks about how the crucifixion is a great metaphor for marriage.
Well,
that's sending them out with a winning attitude, pal.
That's a great metaphor.
There was
sacrifice.
Communion.
Communion, yes.
Was part of the wedding ceremony.
Yes, that's often the case.
Now, what was interesting in a Catholic ceremony, unlike other ceremonies I've attended, if you weren't Catholic, if you didn't know the drill, you were not invited to participate.
That's right. Don't come up.
Yeah, don't come up.
Yeah, you don't
and
get to eat the cookie.
It's probably best for everybody that I didn't, because I might have had a few choice words for the priest. But this wedding was breezing along. It was beautiful. It was fun. Everything was great. I was having a great time. Then we get to the part about the communion and 45 minutes of this guy talking about communion. What happened to the people getting married? What happened to the focus on them? And I don't mean to be again, I'm an outsider. What do I know? I don't know anything. You almost need a church that big to fill what I don't know about religion. But I was somewhat perplexed. Now, on the flip side of this,
mm-hmm.
I look over across the aisle and I see John's father, James, and his mother, Marianne, and his brother, Jimmy. And during the process of one of the prayers during this, you know, they're all holding hands. And it was just so beautiful. It was just so touching to see these people that I really care about. So
right.
Brought together by their faith. It was just so beautiful. But yeah, to any outsiders... to the Catholic faith out there planning to attend a Catholic wedding anytime soon, I'll have some pointers for you. So
How long did the ceremony last?
No, it wasn't that long. But maybe an hour or so,
okay,
something like that.
Okay, that's not bad.
But it was great. When I first arrived and Marianne saw me and came over and greeted me, the first thing out of my mouth was, did I come the farthest? What did I win?
Did I get a prize?
What did I win? Yeah, she said I won the opportunity to stick around the next day to help them clean up.
So you did.
So then we go to Centerville. For the reception in the backyard of the Lawlers'
The actual
home.
Neighborhood's called Centerville?
Centerville, is Virginia. And it's really quaint and rustic and beautiful. And the setup they made for the reception was totally cool. I mean, it was just gorgeous. There was a tent because rain was expected and didn't come for a brief period of time. Where there was dining and dancing and speeches and everything. But then throughout this large yard, you know, there was also an area with fire pits to make s'mores. And then there were cocktail tables and several bars. And it was just a
sounds
gorgeous,
fun.
Gorgeous night. And, you know, got to meet so many wonderful people. But Kelly's parents are great. John's parents are great. And, you know, we talk about John on the show because for people who've only joined us recently, among other things, a really, really talented musician.
Right.
Whose band, the B-Film Extras.
Yes.
Does the theme song to our film, The Truth Is Out There.
And?
And the theme song to a certain podcast called Monsanto's House of the Future.
No. Chill Back Hollywood Hour.
Oh, right. Chill Back Hollywood Hour.
That was their music you heard off the top of the show and you'll hear at the end of the show.
And I kept expecting the band, because also his bandmates were there. I spent a lot of good time talking to the very talented and funny Clint Herring. Mm-hmm. I expected them to play a set.
Yeah, but it's their wedding.
Instead, all the music's coming off iPods. It was like people were fighting over the iPod, you know. But you know who you don't want to be at a wedding these days?
The iPod.
No,
the
you don't
DJ.
Want to be Billy Ocean because apparently you never get a whole song of yours played. You know, you get to barely say "Get out of my dreams and into my car" before they cut
off?
You off.
Wow.
Meanwhile, under pressure, you get to play as many times as you want.
They played apparently. Under pressure over and over again.
Yeah.
Wow. That's kind of odd, considering that.
No, because a wedding is a marriage is like a crucifixion,
which is a lot of pressure. Don't kid yourself.
Wow. No, it was really fun. I mean, it's one of my very favorite weddings I've ever been to, and the Lawlers are great. And this couple, Kelly and John, it's so fantastic when you see people get married who really are already married. When you see them, you go, they're not doing this hoping now to become.
Right.
Husband and wife.
They're already there.
Yeah, they're already a team, and they're now announcing to the world, we are there.
Make it official.
And I don't know. I mean, I'm biased, but I hope they move to Los Angeles someday because both of them could do extraordinarily well out here. And
right?
I would like to see John do more acting, too.
Really?
In fact, I think the whole B-Film Extras ought to come out here.
Well, now they're listening, and they're probably going to stay at your place.
You know who I finally got to meet, and I'd never been able to, was John's older brother, Jimmy,
right.
Who's a great guy and just a brilliant lighting designer.
Oh.
Does lighting for film and television and stage in New York and in Europe. But I really look forward to interacting with him in the future, and hopefully one day we'll get to maybe hire Jimmy to do something on a project. I don't know why we're talking like this, but hopefully we'll stop.
Okay. Awesome.
There you go. That's my live event of the week.
Fantastic. Well, why don't we take a little break and hear a commercial?
Of course, one of the big stars on The X-Files, and he's making a documentary called The Truth Is Out There.
One of the things that UFO research has done to me is instill in me a healthy disrespect for the things that government says.
They are poisoning our people. There is a population control agenda. There really are people who want to kill off the majority of the people in the world.
If we don't allow these corrupt banks to fail, then the nation will fail and there will be no recovery.
Don't stand on the sides of the river and comment on how corrupt and dark and evil everything is. We all know that.
I don't need to have you understand or agree with me or believe. It doesn't matter to me. I know what I know.
The name of our film is?
The Truth Is Out There.
But it really isn't.
But isn't there a universal truth that science is going for?
Perhaps the universal truth is what makes us subjective.
Okay, you just blew my mind.
Wasn't that fun?
You know, we got so many kind words about our film while I was at the Lawler wedding.
Oh, is that right?
So many people there had seen it. And
well, you know where I got kind words from that? I was walking my dogs in front of the Federal Reserve, not two blocks here in downtown, in the middle of a giant anti-Fed protest. And who should stop me but a fan of our movie? He recognized me from the documentary, which he's seen a couple of times, and it's inspired him to actually pitch a TV series based on a lot of the things we talked about in the movie. I know. How great was that? This fellow named Chris. And he was sitting there, and he knew he lived very close to Mr. Edward Griffith and was a big fan of everything we've done, and he was part of that protest to fighting the feds.
Feel free to hire us.
Yes, that's what I mentioned that to him. The dogs were in a bit of a hurry to go. We were on the
upswing. You're out there listening, we appreciate your support, and we want you to know no job is too small, no fee is too big. Right?
That's on our business card.
Here. Yeah. At Monsanto's House of the Future.
No, we're not Monsanto's House of the Future.
Someone else who loved it was Robert Sammo, Fanboy Nation, who called the film a true masterpiece.
I know. Did you see that review?
No. Yeah.
I don't want to brag.
So anyway, so anybody who wants to
see the movie,
check it out, truth-is-out-there.com.
We're keeping that website.
Need to revisit the Chilpack Hollywood Wingnut of the Week that we did 2 weeks ago, which was Truth Is Out There related.
Right.
Because the shared spotlight of the Wingnut of the Week was shining on Dr. Stanley Monteith, Alex Jones, and myself.
Right,
and
that's
we were talking about the fluoridation of water.
Right.
And that it's an awful, awful, awful thing. 70% of the country still fluoridates its water.
Needlessly?
And now everything, National Institute of Health, Harvard, everyone says
that's a bad idea.
It causes brain damage and has lowered the IQs of children. And it's hard not to think about those things when you see the headline in the Washington Post that says, for four decades, SAT scores have steadily declined and reading comprehension scores are at an all-time low in this country.
And you need go no further than call customer service somewhere, and you'll see that the decline.
That would be India, though.
I'm thinking of like local customer service.
So, in relating to fluoride and that wing nut of the week, wing nut (parentheses S)
right.
of the week. Hi, Dean and Phil. Thanks again for the glowing review of Hearts Like Fists, which had been one of our live events of the week. Keith Allen was thrilled to hear your review. Well, Keith Allen is a talent. He's a brilliant actor, and we look forward to getting to see him in something I hope very soon. Listening to podcast number 279 today, I was gratified to hear you discussing the water fluoridation issue.
Yes.
It was very timely in that the Portland City Council and Mayor just made a very controversial decision to unanimously vote to fluoridate our beloved source of pure drinking water, which comes straight from the Mount Hood Wilderness.
Yeah.
They only allowed one meeting for public comment, then announced that the system would be installed before we could gather enough signatures to put the issue on a ballot measure. They also ignored the will of the voters who have voted down fluoridation three times since the late 1950s. I vigorously tweeted my outrage and links to the Harvard study to the mayor to no avail in the run-up to their vote a week ago. We're gathering signatures to put the matter on the ballot, despite the fact that the city is now planning on installing it before we can vote on it. Turns out the mayor's campaign manager is also a lobbyist for the fluoride industry.
Oh.
The mayor ignored questions about that fact during the discussion time preceding the vote. Thanks for being on the right side of this issue. Looking forward to hanging out next time you're in Portland. Cheers, Mike O'Connor.
See, now that's very odd, because if anybody didn't need fluoridation of water, it is the Oregon, I mean, the whole Pacific Northwest gets more water living in a rainforest. Fluoridation was also the idea that it was to help purify the water, as one argument had it. And there's no more pure water than a place that gets more rain than anywhere else it'll that community size on Earth. I mean, it's shocking. That they fluoridate it now. Why now in 2012, of all things, do you start fluoridating the water?
And good for you, Mike O'Connor, for having the energy
to fight the power
to do this.
Yes.
Because it's got to feel thankless. You know, I mean, obviously we all can get angry and that motivates us to do something, but sustaining anger in this day and age seems almost impossible.
It's a lot of energy.
Because there's going to be something else that's going to expect you to be angry
the next day,
15 minutes from now.
Yeah,
right?
15 minutes.
And who has that? And so it's got to be beyond that. I mean, you got to drop into something even
more noble,
deeper, and more or integral to your makeup,
yes,
to be able to do things like this. So you know what? Let's make Mike O'Connor our wingnut of the week.
Yay! Way to go, Mike O'Connor.
The Chill Pack Hollywood wingnut of the week.
I wish we had T-shirts that we could send out. Wingnut of the week. That'd be fun.
That'd
Mark
be awesome.
Bennett suggests that every single week.
That we get T-shirts of Wingnuts of the Week or T-shirts of just the new Chill Pack Hollywood Hour? Because we do have
Wingnut
the
of the Week. Yeah, we'll talk about the T-shirts at some other time.
Right.
Know, I think that would be good.
Yeah, don't tell our fans about their T-shirts.
Yeah, that are for sale.
That are for sale.
Why? That would cheapen it.
That's right. You only have to call Phil to find out about the T-shirts that he has in a giant box in his apartment. We don't want to advertise. Just ask him occasionally, just randomly. Hey, you got a T-shirt for sale?
Are you criticizing me?
No. I'm just saying our marketing plan might require a little tweaking. That's all. I'm just saying.
I am doing enough tweaking.
I'm tweaking now. That's hilarious.
Hey, you know what I've been wanting to mention? You saw The Untouchables not too long ago.
I did.
And I've been meaning to mention this to you for weeks now. And so I put it in bold on my notes so that this time I wouldn't forget. Did you see that The Untouchables, a delightful film, passed Amelie for the most admissions sold? You know how comparing box office these days is sort of irrelevant. But it sold the most admissions outside France for any French language film of all time.
It beat Amelie.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And when you think about that, when you think about number of admissions sold.
Yeah.
That's really a critical
accounting.
Yeah. Measuring stick. Tool, I think.
Yeah.
I think it had already long ago set the admissions record within France.
Yeah, yeah.
But it...
Well, that's good because, you know, Amelie did great things for the actress. She did a lot of...
Audrey Tautou, absolutely.
Audrey Tautou,
and this actor, the young man who's the lead in
fantastic.
It... Fantastic. ...who won a French award for Best Actor, their version of the Oscars. Should I be ashamed that I just called it their version of the Oscars? It's our Oscars are our version of their César Awards.
César Awards,
I think it's called.
Yeah, that's very good.
I always forget.
It's our version of the Césars.
Yeah.
Yes. Right, he won a César for Best Actor, and rightly so. He's fantastic in this thing.
If you could see me, I think you would know I'm enjoying cake right now.
Oh, yes, some chocolate cake I made earlier this week. Is that the thing?
Mm-hmm. It's very good.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, I've seen a bunch of movies.
You have. Good
for you.
Over the last
few days. And
because you were on a plane.
No, actually since getting back.
Oh.
And it's I was inspired because of something that you and I are doing together. We're putting together a nonprofit to produce films that deal with promoting public health.
Right.
And these are narrative films. These can be documentaries, all sorts of things. And so I have watched a kind of a wide range of films that I thought kind of fit in what we might be doing.
Let's look at that.
Throughout the years.
Yeah.
And it wasn't by design. It was just kind of I saw one and I thought, oh, that's the kind of thing we could do. Nobody's doing it anymore.
Yeah.
And then I saw many different ones.
Oh, cool. What'd you see?
Well... It actually started before I left when I saw Resurrect Dead, The Mystery of the Toynbee Files, you know, Tiles, which I told you about. I saw a film from 1971 directed by Anthony Harvey called They Might Be Giants.
The
rock
band?
Group
yeah.
They Might Be Giants gets its name from this movie.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And... It was based on a play. The screenplay was written by James Goldman, based on a play by James Goldman that played in London in 1961. And he was so unhappy with not having gotten it right that he refused ever to allow future productions of it and has never allowed the play to be published. And his estate won't allow it to be published. But they did make a movie out of it. And the screenplay got published. And it stars George C. Scott as a reformer... type a jurist who has had some kind of trauma and he now believes that he's Sherlock Holmes. And he's treated by a therapist named Dr. Watson.
I see.
Mildred Watson, played by Joanne Woodward.
Ah.
And it's a comedy about consumerism, a comedy about bureaucracy,
wow,
a comedy about technology. 1973,
yeah.
About how these things rob us of our humanity, and that in this such rapid-paced world in which we live, 1971, that you might have to look to the quote-unquote mentally infirm to find humanity.
Ah, right. That's fascinating.
It's a flawed masterpiece, I would call it. But right, it really, it's just...
What a great idea.
It's one of these films that is better now, even probably, than when it came out. And directed by Anthony Harvey, who we've really never spoken about.
No.
This is a guy
by design.
Who directed Lion in Winter.
Oh, yes.
That was,
I love that movie.
Big, written by James Goldman.
Yeah.
But Anthony Harvey, before becoming an award-winning director, was Stanley Kubrick's editor.
Really?
Spartacus, Lolita, Dr. Strangelove. So as I'm watching the performance he's getting out of George C. Scott, who may be, I think we talked about George C. Scott when we talked about our favorite all-time actors.
Yeah.
Is there a more entertaining actor to watch than George C. Scott?
At all. The guy could not care. Like, there, if, this idea of letting go of judgment, of letting go of what the audience, how all this judgment affects you, this guy is free of judges. Like, he so doesn't care what is being perceived of him when he performs that he's so unselfconscious. It's unbelievable.
And so who better to play this part?
Of a crazy...
Of this guy who unapologetically believes that he's Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, totally. Sounds fantastic.
Anyway, so I watched that. I saw something from Rod Lurie that I don't want to talk about too much, but because it was dreadful, but it was from 2008 called Nothing But the Truth. And I was drawn to it because it was...
A similar title to our documentary?
Oh, Nothing But the Truth is out there. Well, there's another connection with us, which is it's the other film that the Yari Film Group was financing at the time they wanted to finance a certain thing we'd written. And this never got released for years because of Yari's imploding.
Legal, yeah.
And it's on Netflix now, 4 years later. And it's inspired by the Valerie Plame CIA case.
Ah, yes.
But in a really kind of offensive way, it says, but what if the main character in that story was the reporter that reported the outing of her? And what if that person was the hero of the story? And what if she was Kate Beckinsale and she was locked up for it and pushed almost to the degree of mental anguish in her heroic
bid to
journalistic
out a CIA agent?
Now, Rod Lurie is a former film critic, the writer-director of this, and so you can see him championing the print media yes, in it and everything.
Right.
But to take what is inherently an interesting story and do so very little with it, well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Rod Lurie, filmmaker.
Ouch! That's a slam.
Wow. Yeah. But on the other end of the spectrum, again, dealing with issues of mental health, mm-hmm, at the Egyptian, Saturday night, Full House.
What was there?
The greatest film of all time.
Tell me now.
Vertigo.
This
is interesting. Last time Vertigo played at the Egyptian, apparently 40 or 50 people there.
Right.
Sight and Sound poll comes out. It's the greatest film of all time. 200 people get turned away.
Because they realize they've never seen it. What's this greatest film I've never heard of?
And we've talked about this. I asked a couple people afterwards, greatest film of all time afterwards?
Yeah.
And, you know, people say no. Greatest Hitchcock of all time? No. Is it a great film? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, its pacing is at times a little slow, and I don't even mean slow by today's standards, because, you know, I love the pacing of 1940s and 50s films.
Absolutely.
But it was slow even by those standards, which I think is one of the reasons that critics didn't like it when it first came out.
Right.
And the fact that critics didn't like it when it first came out is one of the reasons I think they're championing it now.
Now they feel really bad.
It is, again, as I thought, clearly his most personal film. I mean, it is all about his obsessions, his hatreds, if we can say.
Right.
It is a remarkably beautiful film. The performances colors spectacular, are rich, yes. The colors. I had forgotten just how incredible Kim Novak is.
Yes.
I mean, she's expected to play, really, I was counting four or five different parts.
Kind of, yes, it. Yeah.
And so it really was a lot of fun. But again, it left me kind of wanting to go watch other Hitchcock.
See?
It's mandatory viewing,
right,
within his catalog of films. But I'm not sure it's the apex. In fact, I am wondering, even with some of the themes of this, because you'll find in all his movies, almost all his movies, there's the where there's a male lead, there is then the female who loves him and is nurturing towards him and often ends up playing kind of a mother role. Barbara Bel Geddes, who plays Jimmy Stewart's former college fiance, who's
right.
now his best friend, refers to herself as mother with him. Mother's here, even though she still very much holds a torch for him.
Yeah.
And then there's the bad girl that's bad news that the main character loves. The most interesting manifestation of this kind of storyline really would be in Psycho 2 years later.
Absolutely. That relationship.
And
he's playing out again and again.
Psycho could be his greatest film, couldn't it?
Well, I guess so. But he had, I think what the upset there is that he funded it himself and it was a TV crew that he used. So the, there was no studio that would back him on Psycho. It was technically an independent film. So I would say that I would agree Psycho is
That's what I would think then the people would champion.
Was that his independent spirit and the fight against the studios?
Absolutely.
I guess.
Because one of the reasons that European critics developed the auteur theory was to...
Because of Hitchcock.
Was in part because of Hitchcock, to celebrate these directors who worked within studios, who didn't get writing credit, didn't get editing credit, but clearly had their hands on all aspects of it.
Right.
And you could see such a...
Personal.
A handprint on every single film, and it dealt with these similar themes coming at them from different angles. And so you would think, well, now he is an independent filmmaker.
Right.
Why not champion that one? And the only reason's behind, and it is championed.
It is.
But it's almost championed as a genre film.
Right. As
and
a
I
horror.
Wonder if that we can't, that's part of it. And it was more directly influential than something like Vertigo.
That's true.
Which I would argue
makes it
greater. But it also maybe makes people at least unconsciously blame it.
Right.
So many of its imitators.
Right. And that you see it then for its... After you see so many imitations and then you see the original, it seems a little creaky at that point.
Not dealing with public health or mental health at all.
Right.
I saw Western Joe Kidd starring Clint Eastwood and Robert Duvall, but also starring John Saxon, who's so good in it. Egyptian, and I bring this up because Egyptian's doing a double feature of Enter the Dragon with the Appaloosa, John Saxon there.
Come on.
To introduce the films.
No
and talk
way.
About them.
It's an all John Saxon. He's your man crush, for crying out loud.
No. He's not my man crush. We've worked together.
Man crush.
As you well know, I stop having a crush on men the moment I work with them. What?
Also weird.
The house of the future. Finally, Dean Haglund, and maybe this is about to disprove what I just said. First thing I did when I woke up this morning.
What'd you watch?
Tales from the Gimli Hospital.
Oh my God, you made that your breakfast viewing?
Yeah.
That is shocking.
Yes,
brilliant film.
Guy Madden's first movie, 1989.
Yes.
Gimli,
a small town north of Winnipeg, from where I grew up.
This film, 16mm black and white.
Yes, as he always shoots. Some in 8mm.
Using so many silent film techniques. It really could at times be a movie from the silent era.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yet with modern themes and deep psychological issues.
Innovative in that way. Reminiscent not only of silent films, but at times reminiscent to me of the films of Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger. And then I see in the end credits that they actually shot Angels that Michael Powell created.
Right.
So, you know, you see some of those influences. It's a really, it's a beautiful film. It reminds me a little bit of, again, 1988 is when Wim Wenders made Wings of Desire, Wings which of inspired Desire. Me.
Yeah.
I am, again, watching it somewhat perplexed by how much of an inspiration this film could be for you, and yet you don't like David Lynch.
So that's okay. You know what?
But I would before you launch into a defense about that. One thing that is kind of an interesting way in which Lynch and Guy Madden are joined is late 80s Lynch makes Blue Velvet. Late 80s Guy Madden makes Gimli Hospital. It's their first film. And they both get nominated for awards in their respective, you know, countries.
Yeah.
But what so often happens, and is what happened with Guy Madden, when he gets nominated for a Canadian equivalent of the Oscar, it's for best screenplay. Of all things to be nominated for that, yeah, it's best screenplay.
There's hardly a screenplay involved in that.
Yeah.
And talk about a personal film for that guy. That film... you know, brought everything to bear on all his issues.
Whereas if it had been an American film, I think he would have gotten a director nomination, yeah, not anything else. Because that's like what Lynch would get with Blue Velvet. But, you know, there's these films that I always talk about where the director's branch is the one person or the one group in the Academy that says, look, as a group, the Academy cannot embrace you. We just want to let you know we're glad you're one of us.
Exactly. Exactly. But how about that horrific scene with the flying light bulb in the shadow with the other? Doesn't that like still scare you now? That you watched it at breakfast, that floors me.
I didn't find it scary.
Well,
at
because
all.
You watched it at breakfast. You should see it in the middle of the night, like when I saw it.
Yes. I just found it really kind of hauntingly beautiful.
Yes.
And the whole story about, you know, the steam coming from the earth to warm the villages. Yeah. You know, the animals are down below. And there was just so many great stories and the one-upping each other's stories. And this whole idea, and this is why I wanted to see it too, this idea of it is healthy. It's one of the reasons we made Truth Is Out There and why we made it the way that we did. The act of telling stories... Of taking our experiences and turning them into stories,
right,
is healthy.
Right,
the act of creating in that way is healthy. It helps us to make sense of what it means to actually be human, which is more important often than what trying to find out what a particular event meant.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
What does it mean to have witnessed that event? What does it mean to be a person on planet Earth,
yeah,
at this point in time.
And to tell then tales that are metaphors and stuff like that, which he always works in. Oh, I love it. Well, I'm glad you saw that. And I hope you watch all the Guy Madden films out there, because some are more entertaining than others. But I recommend a good place to start, Tales from the Gimli Hospital.
We mentioned Sight and Sound poll. We are doing our own Chilpack Hollywood Sight and Sound poll for the end of the year.
That's what we're doing.
Been reaching out to people, every guest on Chilpack Hollywood Hour, asking them to send in their top films of all time.
Yes.
Plus their favorite theaters.
Yeah.
And their least favorite film or the first film they ever walked out on.
Yeah.
Saw something in the news that made me think of one of our contributors, David Soboloff, sent his list in.
Yeah, he did.
And on his list of 10 top films of all time is Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, really?
And I was so disappointed to learn that Rupert Wyatt, the director of Rise of the Planet of the Apes, has exited the sequel because I thought they set it up beautifully.
Yes.
For a sequel. And he gave the same reason that Gary Ross gave in leaving the Hunger Games sequel. The studio is simply not allowing enough time to do it right.
Ah.
And one of the names, so that disappoints me, one of the names rumored to be in the running as a director, and the only interesting name in the running, is Jeff Nichols, who I've been championing on this show, directed Take Shelter, Shotgun Stories, the upcoming Mud. And at the same time, I hope he doesn't do it, because we don't need that guy doing Planet of the Apes movies.
Right.
You've got a guy who can do Planet of the Apes movies. He just did one.
Yeah.
Have him do that.
Right. And give him more time.
Yeah. And give Jeff Nichols more time and more money to do another movie that Jeff Nichols does.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't that be something? But I guess like anything, it's a paycheck.
I think
somewhere you got to pay that mortgage.
Why don't we do a lightning round Celebrity deaths.
Celebrity deaths.
Go.
Andy Williams died.
Oh, yes.
At age 84.
Right.
World famous, beloved, easy listening singer of familiar popular hits such as Can't Get Used to Losing You, Days of Wine and Roses, and the Oscar winning Moon River. He was 84. He had a long-running, Emmy-winning variety program, the Andy Williams
Show.
All throughout the 60s. Of course, he was famous for his yearly run of Christmas specials.
Yes.
It became a holiday tradition.
Yep.
He was also the host of the Grammy Awards through most of the 70s, and on the 25th anniversary, I think it was, of the Grammys in 83. And my first recollection as a child of Andy Williams was when he hosted... And I'm betting coked out of his mind at the Grammys. There was always the rumor.
There was a little, yeah.
It was the year that Songs in the Key of Life was up for Best Album, the two-disc album, Songs in the Key of Life from Stevie Wonder. And Stevie Wonder was performing somewhere in Africa, and they had connected to him via satellite to perform that night.
Uh-huh.
And Andy Williams, not trying to be funny, thank God, says, "Stevie, can you see us?" That's my first recollection of Andy Williams. Nevertheless, the velvet-voiced Andy Williams, who became, by the way, hugely popular in the UK this last decade. In 1999,
right.
He charted thanks to a commercial.
That commercial with that song I never heard of. But you had that album where he redid Nirvana, and wasn't it?
No. That's Paul Anka.
Paul Anka,
who's very much alive. Paul Anka, not dead. Andy Williams, dead. Though I saw Andy Williams recently on an episode of Later with Jules Holland, this music show in the UK
get here.
Actor Johnny Lewis died at age 28, and this is a murder mystery involving my neighborhood.
Yeah, right in your neighborhood.
He's known for his roles on Son of Anarchy and The O.C., dating Katy Perry.
Right.
He was found this past Wednesday in a driveway in my neighborhood of Los Feliz.
Go crazy.
An elderly woman was found beaten to death inside the home.
And her cat.
To which the driveway led.
Yeah.
Authorities believe at this point that Lewis, who they say was on some sort of drugs, perhaps PCP or crystal meth.
Or something they call Smile.
Attacked the woman, and then after struggling with two men, ran up to the roof. It is believed that he fell off the roof to his death.
Right.
He was renting a room from the 81-year-old woman.
Right. And he also went after the neighbors who had a house painter, and they barricaded themselves in. They just came out with their story today, in fact, I read it. So, he may have been on a synthetic version of MDA ecstasy, that's called Smile, that is very impure and affects the brain inversely.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard of it.
It's brand new.
As far as you know. Stevie, can you see us? Arthur Oakes Salzberger died at 86. Mm-hmm. You remember Arthur.
No.
Transformed the New York Times for the modern era after his grandfather purchased it.
Oh.
Longtime publisher of the New York Times.
Right.
I think his son is now in charge of it. Michael O'Hare. This is a guy that I always wondered what happened to him on a particular show, but never wondered enough to actually look into it.
Right.
He was the star the first season of Babylon 5. He played Commander Sinclair.
Sinclair, yeah.
And then he left after the first season. He did do some of the reunion movies.
Right, the big battle, the final... He was in that.
Anyway,
Michael O'Hare.
And he was a really accomplished and acclaimed stage actor, especially in New York.
Yeah.
He died at age 60 just this morning or last night.
Wow, that's so young. What was the cause of death?
I did not look into that.
Wow.
I heard about it on the way to the studio. Finally, Lance Legault, a 77-year-old veteran character actor. You know how I love the character actors.
Yes.
Probably spend too much time talking about them. But I wanted to end with him because this guy's life is another illustration of how everybody's path towards making it in show business is completely unique. And that's what's so beautiful. It's what can be hard, but it's what's so beautiful and inspirational about it. At the age of 13... an orphan who was working the railroads.
Wow.
He got his first break because he signed up to do some extra work on a John Wayne film.
Ah.
And John Wayne singled him out and was so pleased with this 13-year-old's ability to really be a real cowboy.
Yeah.
Told Lance he should move to California. And that was the inspiration this boy needed. He was also a musician, and he started playing nightclubs in both Las Vegas and Los Angeles, where he found himself opening for the likes of Frank Sinatra, and then later attracted a very well-known fan. Elvis Presley became a huge fan of his music, and so he played many shows with Elvis and doubled him as a stunt double and a music double in times in so many of his movies.
Wow. Did he do the stunt of Bossa Nova playing the organ behind his back?
No, no. We love that. That's the greatest moment in movie history.
Yes.
And he became a really well-known character actor. You'd recognize his face immediately from so many shows in the 70s and 80s, like Battlestar Galactica and The Incredible Hulk. His breakthrough role in films was Coma in the late 1970s, and he had a great supporting role in the Bill Murray hit Stripes, and he was a regular on the TV series The A-Team. But just one of these guys that, you know, you always bought him in whatever role he played, no doubt because of this long life experience he had behind it.
Behind it. Which is ironic because John Wayne got his start by being a stage carpenter and then asked to come in front of the camera in a silent film. So it's neat that he passed that on to another actor.
What better way to end another installment of Your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour? I've got a big piece of cake I need to finish.
Yeah.
So what's left to say? Like us on Facebook.
Please like us.
Facebook.com/ChillPackHollywood.
Go to MySpace.
MySpace. You can read a blog each weekend previewing the following week's show. MySpace.com/ChillPackHollywood.
You know how to email us.
Write us or follow us on Twitter.
Right. I'm at D. Haglin, and I'm not Russian.
Yeah. If you see Dean Haglin writing in Russian, it's not Dean Haglin.
Those are Estonian teenagers.
And who live in Monsanto's House of the Future. I'm on Twitter at Phil Lernis. Till next week.
I'm Dean Haglin.
Be good to each other.
Belated spoiler alert.